is Iconic, with your hosts JM, Mark, and Nick.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host JM, and with me as always are Nick and Mark.
Hey!
Hello!
This week in That Iconic Look, we will be talking about monster creation 13th Age, and how to tweak, reskin, and design your own monsters. And then at the end, much like our encounter creation episode, we have each prepared a monster for your use. Let's head into That Iconic Look.
That Iconic Look.
So monster creation is all about getting the effect you want from your monster design. And there are really kind of three ways to do this. The easiest way is to just reskin a monster. Use Pelgrane Press's Monster Finder. They have all of the official monsters from all of the Tales of the 13th Age and published books that you can just look up and sort by keywords and levels. Head to Vault of the 13th Age. I mean, there are plenty of monsters out there to use. And then it's just a matter of saying, instead of purple skin, it has green skin and horns, and there you go.
So you're literally reskinning them.
Yeah, you're literally reskinning them.
I will say, we're going to put a link to the show notes. Someone has created a spreadsheet of, and we talked during our encounter creation about how we wish that Pelgrane on their website would have icon relationships to all of the monsters. Well, somebody has gone through and done all that. So they've got a spreadsheet out there that's publicly available. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. That way, if you're looking for like an Elf Queen-themed monster, you can search for that and grab them.
Very cool. The other thing that you can do is steal powers from other monsters.
Yeah, that's great. It's almost, you know, when I'm thinking about reskinning, it's not literally skinning it and giving it a new skin color. But taking the power of that would be really great, or changing, you know, after the second, third time of throwing red caps at somebody, how do you mix it up? Well, give them some power off the demon list.
We go back to the demon list quite a bit.
Demon list and red caps, if you haven't caught that theme yet.
Yeah. It's a great list.
Yeah, I really think that if we were to restart the show, we would have a completely different mascot.
Well, you have demons, devils, pick anything, dragon powers. Just pick up some powers that you like, throw it in there to surprise them.
Yeah. If you have a hobgoblin tribe that has ties to a dragon, you know, it's their totem, give them a fire breath ability. Give them some ability from the kobolds who normally have ties to the dragons. It's really simple to just switch out a power. And that's kind of, at this point, that would be one of the things I would recommend doing, as opposed to just completely just adding a new power. Switch it out for one they already have. Try and keep the level balance where it's
at. That's it. You know, the other thing is, you know, there's, you know, we're going off the core book, 13 True Ways, the Bestiary. More than likely, what you're thinking about for your critter has already been written down
somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So go look at other monsters instead of reinventing the wheel. Not that you can't be, you know, depending on how much time you have. The power is probably there. Even if it's too powerful, maybe it's an epic level monster, but you can look at it and go, okay, so if that's epic, let me tone it down. Okay, here's an adventure tier. Power, you know, that damage, duration, whatever it is, it's probably out there already. Yeah. You just need to adapt it to that one, give it a different name.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's in a kind of what I did for my monster. We'll get to our monster creations later, but I basically just took two and kind of mashed them together and went with that.
Yeah, and then one thing I'll point out, so the difference between stealing and reskinning is reskinning, you're just using, you know, a kobold grand wizard and calling it a human charlatan. You're just changing the name and the description while keeping the monster the same. When you start hacking a monster apart is kind of what we were talking about stealing.
Yeah.
And then kind of the focus of this episode is building your own monsters. And 13th Age gives you a lot of tools for do-it-yourself monster creation. We're going to start in the 13th Age core rulebook. We're looking at pages 252 through 255. Nick, you want to walk us through what we have available to us tool-wise?
A couple things that stood out to me as I was reading through this again is there's some great tables in here, not only just for defining you know, what sort of initiative bonus you should give them, but also hit point values, AC values, you know, all that sort of stuff. That way, if you have in your mind, hey, I want to do a 7th level monster of some flavor, at least you have some frame of reference of where to start.
Yeah, you have the baseline numbers, They also give you some advice on how to change level-based stats. So the level-based stats are your AC, your hit points, your damage, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it also gives you six little preset changes. So if you want a monster to be an oaf or defensive or a scrapper, increase X, Y, and Z by this many points, decrease X, you know, A, B, and C by this many points.
And that's great. That's what I used on mine.
Yeah, the monk, I did the same thing.
Big and squishy. Yeah. Monk, that's what I did with mine. I designed it, and then I kind of looked, okay, this is what he is, looked at their guide and said, okay, let me lower his AC, and I will give him more hit points.
Yeah.
Easy to hit him, but he's going to stay there for a while.
For a lot longer, yeah. So, and again, when you look at stuff like that, just keep in mind of what each of these changes is going to bring to your monster. So like in Mark's case, when he took the, which one was that?
The Lunk.
When you take the Lunk, they're big and squishy, so they have -3 to all defenses, but a 40% HP boost. So from the player's perspective, they're going to start off feeling very heroic against this creature because they're hitting it so often. Yet the thing still just won't get staggered, still won't die. So it's a little bit of a morale boost in the beginning, and then starts tapering off as they realize this thing just has more and more hit points. While everything else is dropping around it, it's still there in the fight, still coming at it. If you do a scrapper, +3 to hit, 70% of the hit points. Yeah, it's going to die quickly, but it's going to do massive amounts of damage to the group before it hits. So when you're looking at the different template tweaks, think about what the players are going to be experiencing when you make those changes.
Yeah, and they had a really good point, too, about something to avoid in creating your monsters, and that's avoid things that make it harder for the monsters to be killed. Because, again, you don't want to have this just be a kill fest where you're aiming for a TPK or anything like that. You want the players to come out victorious because that creates a more fascinating story. So if you are going to be putting abilities in there that adds resistance or anything like that, make sure that they have some way of still being able to be effective against that.
Mm-hmm. That's why I took the Lunk one. He's going to have more hit points because I designed it and I looked at it, and then looking at their guidelines, as tough, you know, I wanted more hit points, wanted him to last longer. I was like, well, his AC is too high. I need to lower this to make it fair. And that's what you do. If I left the AC high and the hit points high, then I'm looking at probably DPK because it wasn't going to be a 1-on-4 fight.
Right.
You know, I actually did too. I have Mooks and I have the Lunk.
Nice.
I design. So.
So yeah, they also give you four different tables for stats because you have mooks, regular monsters, double strength monsters, and triple strength monsters. The other table to keep in mind that's not really there is on page 200. It's the fear threshold table or the sickness table, as we will see in our monster creations. Fear is a real simple mechanic to manage in 13th Age, much more so than any other game that I have played that has had fear mechanics. So if you're, you know, it's a very simple power to add on to a monster that changes the way the game plays.
Yeah, I like it. Instead of initially, you know, right from the get-go, they'll save or run away type thing. This is more of as you get beat down, the despair
sets in.
Kind of sets in and you're like, we're going to die if I don't run. Screw you guys, I'm running.
All right, so there's some additional advice on monster creation in the 13th Age Bestiary. The piece that really stands out to me, in addition to giving you some examples on how to just reskin or build your own monsters, they give you some advice on how to build powers. Mark, you wanna walk us through what the advice they give us on power creation?
So, yeah, instead of just rolling your d20 and if they hit, you hit, you know, wolf bite you, in their example, it does 5 points, move on. You can add some flavor, depending on what kind of creature you want and what it can do. You can do some of the natural evens, natural odd rolls that trigger certain things, 16 plus, 18 plus, that kind of thing, not just a crit being special. So you could be, if they roll 18 plus, they do this.
Yeah, and they walk you through kind of what it means. You know, if it's a natural miss, it means the monster missed you but did something interesting half the time when it misses you, you know? So like the example they give is the half-orc tribal chief champion heals itself on an odd miss.
Yeah, and it kind of ties into some of the player powers that do that. If they roll an even or an odd, if they miss, they do damage, but if they do even or odd, certain things happen. You can also tie in escalation die if they do certain things. I did on one of mine, if it's even or odd.
One that I would like to see used more often is the natural roll above a character's ability stat. I think that's a very cool mechanic that. I don't know if I can pick out a monster that has that, but you know, you could do a knockback where if the natural roll of the D20 is above the character's strength, they get thrown back into a trap or something like that.
Knock back, knock down. So that kind of thing that you can tie into your monster. And again, think of what it is, what you're trying to convey. You're fighting Cthulhu and you get all those tentacles.
Yeah. The other thing that's really, that I found that has really helped me designing monsters is the Monster Toolkit by Revan. I'm going to butcher this name. Revan Sidrill. We'll provide a link in the show notes to his Google Doc that walks you through monster creation, has some interesting tooltips and advice.
And we apologize for the name, RC. So.
That's right. Sorry about that, RC. All right. So let's take a step away from the math and the mechanics, and let's talk about what makes a monster interesting. So, Nick, we're going to start with you. From the player side of things, what makes a monster interesting to fight?
I think the key word for me is memorable. I think that when you boil all of the flavor and all of the descriptions and environment and all of that away, and you're just talking about numbers, okay. When there's a lot of flavor injected into a monster itself, whether they're tying into the environment in some way or they have this oddly shaded green skin that doesn't look quite right and puffs of smoke fly from its skin every time you hit it, that sort of thing, it becomes memorable in your mind. And that's, to me, that's what would make a monster interesting to fight, is one that I'm going to walk away mulling over. It's like, hey, do you remember that time that we took out that dragon and there was just something weird about it? You know, it always flew upside down or something like that. Just a little bit of flavor. And it's kind of getting away from the mechanics of it. But
Mark, from you, what's a...
Yeah, similar. You know, is it memorable? Do you remember? Not to link to another adventure, but remember the Remoraz fight when I lost my sword? Yeah. That one's memorable because that was the first time I fought one.
Okay.
You know, and someone put in that, you know, hey, they're so hot that weapons melt. And if they're magical, they have a chance to save, but they could also melt. There's nothing like losing your magic weapon because the creature is superheated. So, and then again, that was a unique thing that only really affected the weapons. It didn't, well, if you got swallowed too, but, you know, just one of those things that you put into a monster that makes it memorable. Not that if you're a GM, you have to make every monster memorable, but.
Well, sometimes just putting a twist in the monster too. You think he's dead and then something happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. From a running perspective, what makes monsters interesting for you to run as a GM, Mark?
I think it's very similar if it's memorable. If it's fun as a GM and it comes up with like an idea of, wow, I never thought of that, and you run it. And again, I don't look at how many players I can kill or not kill, but make it fun. I like at the end of a session where we're gathering up our stuff and people are heading home and they immediately start talking about, wow, that was a pretty cool, yeah, you know, and you slipped in its blood because, you know, it was slippery and this happened. And they talk about what just happened that night in the adventure. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like, okay, I can go home now because this really was a waste of, you know, 3 hours of my time.
Yeah.
But it's memorable for them and it was fun for you to run it and to see. I know as a GM, when you throw something out there and it's not just, you know, or here, you know, okay, we've got the goblins are coming out and the first time you throw that red cap at them and they're like, whoa, and they really remember that because it's, oh, okay, another goblin fight. Okay, I pull out my sword, I'm going to beat them down. And
okay.
Things start to happen and it's memorable and it's fun that, it, you know, you get the chuckle.
So let's tie that back into the show topic on monster creation.
I think a little bit just thematically making the attacks fit the creature. I mean, if you're, let's say you're going to have a pack of monkeys attacking someone and all of them have...
Poop throwing?
The fling poo ability?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because that would fit the...
But you should have an effect. What's it do? Are you blinded? Are you dazed?
And that would be very different from them breathing ice fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should fit. Yeah, you know, or, you know, they pull out the Uzi and hose you down. You're like, what? Wait, what? Yeah. You know, the disbelief there. But yeah, it's there. They kind of expect it, but they still enjoy it, I think would work.
Okay.
Like you said, the expression or the setback of when you unveil that unique thing that is in this monster. It's not just a zombie, but it's a zombie that does this. And the players kind of take that step back going, whoa. Okay, how are we going to get around this? And again, it makes it memorable. They're going to remember that in the future, I think.
Okay. So no real advice on how to make it memorable.
No, I mean, it's got to fit, like you said, it's got to fit the theme. You know, if you're going undead, or it's a dragon, or a reptile, okay. or it's underwater, or flying, or whatever the theme is, you know, flashback into Cthulhu. If you're doing that kind of a thing, Lovecraftian, it needs to have that dark, sinister feel. If he comes out dressed like a clown, you've lost the players, and you're like, what? You know, it doesn't fit. So it has to fit the monster and the theme and what you're going for.
Okay.
And then helps have that little twist to make it memorable.
I would say, I think you would have to cater to your group, too. I mean, if you take the example of the monkeys flinging fiery poo, I mean, there's going to be some groups that they're just going to be annoyed
poo.
By it.
See, now you grab me. Yeah. Fiery poo. Now that.
But there's some groups that they're just going to latch on to it just for the complete comedic factor of it.
I don't see any other factor to it, Nick. I'm just going to be honest.
I know some people who would get annoyed by it. Okay. But so for certain groups, that would be very memorable.
Cool. Well, mechanically, you have some options to make monsters much more interesting than just I hit you and you take damage. We talked a little bit about using the D20 rolls to trigger powers. And in episode 9, we talked about how to make a monster interesting by tying the escalation die to its powers. So what are some advice that we could give to people about if they're trying to design their own monster for the first time? For me, the two things that I try and keep in mind when I'm designing anything for a game is make it interesting and make it simple. If it's too complicated for you to run, it's probably too complicated for your table. And if you're not excited about running the monster, players aren't going to be excited about playing.
Yeah, there is that caveat of, even for experienced GMs, if you come up with, oh, wow, this is a really, really good idea, and you take some notes, it doesn't matter if you put 5 minutes into it or 5 hours into it. If you run at your table and the players don't love it the way you love it, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Get over it, move on. It just didn't click that night. Not every time what you think is memorable is going to be memorable for them. Maybe because the roles went bad, a lot of different factors. But don't give up. Try to make it interesting. I also look at balance. I mean, especially if you're designing not just reskinning or I'm just going to borrow a power to make this orc lord just a little bit different, but you come up with a completely new thing, make sure it's kind of balanced because mm-hmm. you don't want to have that accidental TPK because
your players didn't run
flung
away.
Godzilla at them. Well, yeah, they can, but you know, there are some times too when you're just like, wow, that didn't really go well. You know, and they can get frustrated too, you know. Fling Godzilla at him. Well, I can't hit him. I can't damage him. I can't, you know, he's immune to all my spells because you just thought this is the best monster ever. Not fun either. So make it balanced. Make it so they can, maybe they have to be inventive, you know, and throw the burning oil down to impede its progress. Or flaming poo as a getaway, you know. I like that flaming poo. I think the flying monkeys in The Wizard of Oz are way underrated. That was very scary as a kid seeing that going, ooh, flying monkeys, and they're quite evil. They're not fun monkeys.
No.
So fling the poo and then one throws a torch and it's catches on fire.
I will kind of object a little bit in regards to, you know, you were talking about throwing Godzilla at your table and they can't damage it, they can't do anything, and you're kind of either forcing their choice to run away or die. There's a little bit of thematicness to that if you want to have that be a recurring monster. You know, I'm thinking of Eyes of the Stone Thief. You can't go in the first time and take it out. You gotta go in, you gotta learn a little bit. You gotta come back and go back in and do a little more
true.
Damage. And you know, if you want to take a named NPC and have him be thematic to your campaign, you know, you aren't going to want them to take him out the first time. They've got to experience some amount of defeat at their hands.
That's true. And Stone Thief is a little bit different though, because you're not taking the whole thing on as a single entity. You're going in.
Till the very
For those who haven't done it yet, you know, spoiler alert, but yeah, you're going in and taking piece by piece. I find it, or have found it, more enjoyable as a player, instead of throwing Godzilla and going, okay, we need to run away because we can't beat it, versus beating the mooks, beating the blockers, just grasping the cloak of the bad guy as he slips out the secret door to live to fight another day is much more enjoyable.
I agree with both of you, because there is something to be said about just seeing the effects of Godzilla to get the group interested in tracking him down, like the town is destroyed before they even see the monster. That heightens tension. But I'm also with Mark in the fact that when I run games, there are monsters that you may encounter that are not there for you at that point. So I don't know who I'm agreeing with at this point. I think I agreed with
I agree with Nick too. There is a point of, if you want to bring Godzilla for a point, but don't design this monster because you think it's great, throw it out there and it turns into Godzilla, and that wasn't your intention, and you're like, oh crap, I made this way too tough.
Yeah.
So look at their guidelines that they give you here to help you. And you can read their private. Both of them have their own takes on.
Yeah.
Screw it. They get stepped on. You know, but it gives you some guidelines to make it enjoyable. Remember when we almost beat Godzilla? More memorable than. Remember the time we ran away from Godzilla because he threw it at us? So.
I would say it's another piece of advice that I would give anyone listening to this episode. The first time you design a monster, cleave very tightly to the rules. Cleave to the math. Follow the advice. After you get a couple under your belt and used at the table, that's when you start messing with the numbers. Now you've seen how they get built. Go from there. Again, to put our money where our mouth is, we each created a monster, one for each tier. And we are going to share our monsters with you. We're going to start with Nick, who created a monster for the adventurer tier. Nick, why don't you introduce your monster and kind of let us know what's going on with it?
Sure. This was quite the experience for me because I've never done any sort of monster creation before. So I was holding very tightly to the rule book and the tables that they had provided, and stealing attacks from one monster and another monster, and then trying to scale the attacks to fit the fourth level wrecker that I was creating. So I ended up with creating a... and thematically, I was trying to think of a monster that hasn't already been created, and that was a little bit rough for me. But I had an idea from playing Zelda, and I was like, let's reskin this and throw him into 13th Age. So I created a Monarch. It's a 1,000-year-old scorpion spawned during previous age. The Monarch likes to hide beneath sandy soil and jump out, quickly attacking nearby foes. The rarity of these creatures serves only to make them more valuable to those who seek to protect something. So it's a large fourth-level wrecker. It's got two ginormous pinchers at the front, so it gets two attacks each round. If it hits the same target with both attacks, then it can sting them. Two different types of attacks it can do then. So one's with the pinchers and one's with the stinger, but the stinger's only if it hits with both pinchers in the same round. I also threw a little bit of keeping it interesting. When the escalation die is odd, the damage from the gigantic pinchers increases by 6. But to balance that, I dropped the AC by 2.
What's the theme there? How does that get represented?
Again, because I'm in my mind, I'm playing through fighting this boss in Zelda. There was always a point when it would wind up its attack, so you would see it coming. And if it hit, then it did a lot more damage. But while it was winding back, it was vulnerable to that attack.
So kind of like rears back or something, exposing.
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
It's also a serious burrower, so it can dig underground very, very quickly. And I think, I don't remember which monster I grabbed that from, but it starts with a B. Basically a land shark, whatever.
Boulette.
The Boulette. I did also add a nastier special. That once per battle, whenever you're successful with a stinger attack, so again, that's only after you get double hit with the pinchers, you only deal half damage, and the character has been implanted with the Monarch's offspring. And then after the next full rest, the character can choose between either spending 2 recoveries to remove the offspring, or they can allow it to continue to grow under their skin, losing a certain amount of hit points, and then gaining the offspring, an Arachi, as a magic item that they can then use in future battles.
I would totally include it, not even make a Nastier special. And you don't tell the players until they start feeling
something
odd later.
Yeah. Sweet monster. And you and I talked a little bit back and forth on dialing in the offspring. It's a great idea. Like, I really like it a lot.
Yeah, thanks.
Very good.
All right, Mark, you have a champion tier monster.
I do, and I expanded it to 2 monsters, a Mook.
Such an overachiever.
Well, I try to look at doing this and a wrecker together. As you probably heard, if you've listened on my weekly group, I'm running what I call Aftermath, which is post-apocalyptic. And one of the things is this infected creatures that have been modified by radiation or whatever. So I kind of played that over to what I call infected here. Or demon touched. I think I modified it when I posted it. It is a byproduct of living too close or in a hellhole. The infected are normal plants, animals, or humanoids that have been changed under the relentless effects of chaos. So, and we've talked about that with hellholes and played on that with our demon stuff. And you know what would happen to the surrounding countryside? Or it opens up in your town, the people who stay there, how are they affected by the chaos that's now coming out of this hole? So the first one is a large mutated insect, level 5 Mook. Waves of chaotic energy have mutated the insects in the surrounding area, making them grow large and aggressive. One of the things I gave them, and we've talked about this, is on a natural 18 to 20, they get a spittle attack, and they make a poison spittle as a free action. And again, the stats will be posted there. And if they're hit, they're weakened, which is in the core book, one of the conditions. They fly around, and they're shifty, which I borrowed from another critter, which I don't remember. It might have been a bat. But they get plus 5 versus AC versus opportunity attacks because they're shifty, because they've spent their lifetime avoiding fly swatters. So as they pop free, it's harder to hit them.
Right.
So that's the Mook that's out there. Not too tough. They're Mook. The other one, it has been determined that living near a hellhole can be hazardous to your health. If the demons don't get you first, the environment will. And this is the humanoid person, dwarf, elf that has been mutated. And it's a double strength level 6 wrecker. Again, as we talked about, I used the Lunk, big and squishy. So he has lots of hit points, but it's pretty easy by this level to hit him. He's just going to stick around a bit. And that was in page 159 and 13 True A's, just to go back to that on the Lunk. One of the things I threw in is his explosive personality is when he reaches 0 hit points, he explodes, damaging nearby enemies, and that's a target against physical defense, PD, and they're weakened.
Okay.
So when your big hitter, Barbarian, runs up and beats this down, it's going to explode. Now it's weakened, which, again, goes back. They're going to be, I think, -4 for that battle. Now, the other thing is I gave it a stench aura, which I directly related to the fear based on your hit points. So at his level, once you are under 30 hit points, you will be dazed because of the stench. So you kind of hold it off, but as you get into the fight and you get physically weakened and your hit points reach that low, now you're going to be weakened, just like the fear table. That's what I based it on.
Okay.
And the Nastier special, I connected this one to the escalation die. On every even number facing of the escalation die, the infected heals half of the damage taken. So...
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. As you get up, you know, and it's not to set points. I try to tie it to if it goes to 4 and you've done 150 points, he's going to heal 75. If you're going to hit him for 10 points, he heals 5. So
right.
It's related. It's not a set.
And it eventually stops at 6 because it'll
stop
it
at 6, but
yeah,
hopefully he's just down before, yeah. You know, on the odd facing, you can beat him down, have him explode, weaken your fighter.
So. Now, does he trigger that same ability for the other infected? Like
no,
maybe the Mooks?
That's just him? Only him. Mooks are on their own,
cool.
Doing their own thing. So, and again, you look at this as a double strength mutator. So you have to look at how many you want to appear. Do you want to have them come out gradually in a group? Again, you fit it to your the size and level of your group. You know, if they're higher end of the tier versus a lower end, you might just want to have one with 2 Mooks. Kind of
cool.
Thing, so. Kind of tied in like that, a little bit different. Thought about something, you know, with the hellhole. What happens when you live near one?
Yeah. I like it. So why did you pick Wrecker as opposed to Spoiler? Because you have a lot of conditions that are tied to this creature. Just out of curiosity.
I don't know. I just kind of pictured him kind of wading in there and just flailing about, almost zombie-like. Not undead, but just kind of... I'm ruined, I'm rotting from the chaos that's affecting my body, and he's just kind of going through and doesn't care about his own physical well-being, so he has a low AC, takes the hits, doesn't feel it because the chaos has kind of ruined what it is.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of swinging around blindly and in anger.
Okay.
And takes things down, but because of chaos, it's got weird effects.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense for me.
No, that's what I was thinking. You know, the chaos has just done weird things.
Yeah. I like it. Cool.
All right, Jamie, you did an epic one, right?
I did do an epic one, and in my home game, my home world, there are a number of icons who are evil icons who are starting to band together, and this is a monster that I was getting ready to throw at the PCs. It is basically a demon from the Outer Dark plus, you know, summoned by the High Priest of Vengeance, kind of merged together. And so this is I have a name for it in my world, but it's just going to be a blood demon of vengeance. So they look like very vaguely humanoid blood monsters. They're formed from the blood of a sacrifice and bound to the essence of a demon from the outside. It's a 12th level spoiler. You will get to roll on the random demon ability table. Resistance to physical damage 16 plus because it is a blood creature. You got to break it apart. And it is vulnerable to holy. Has a fear aura. Couple of attacks that are pretty nasty, and if they hit you on a 16 plus, you're going to take some ongoing damage. But the two things that I really like, and why I kind of consider them a spoiler as opposed to a wrecker, they can engulf a creature, and they are blind, stuck, and vulnerable until freed from the monster. Whenever the escalation die increases, they have to make the demon gets to make a drowning in blood attack for free against the target, and if they don't get free, the demon heals and it counts as a last gasp save. So if you get engulfed, you have three saves to get out of there, and they're not just happening on your turn. They're happening on your turn and whenever the escalation die goes up. So you don't get three turns with this monster. You get a turn and a half basically to either save or die.
Unless you don't increase the escalation die.
So it's when the escalation die would increase. So it's at the start of the round. So at the start of the round and on your turn, you're making saves.
You should throw that in there that if they don't, remember like that one demon we fought that, yeah. You know, say, okay, we won't increase the escalation die and kind of prolong the pain.
Ooh, I may have to revisit that. I like that idea. I also have something tied to the escalation die. Basically, whatever the escalation die is in play, so above one, if the players hit only because of the escalation die, so if you're on turn two and you miss by 2 points, but the escalation die kicks in and you hit the monster, it gets to make a retribution attack where you take 25 points of damage. Basically because, yeah, fate may be on your side, but it's going to extract its toll from you. So I will point out that I made no nastier specials because I've often stated
it doesn't get nasty enough.
Doesn't get nastier.
Nastier specials are just specials that I always use. So yeah, that's my monster.
I will say that this monster is based on a monster that I fought as a player, and halfway through the combat, we had the moment of I don't think we can beat this thing. So it's like, all right, let's stop combat and let's just talk this out. So that might be another instance where if you do have a monster that's intelligent, if Godzilla had a brain, you could maybe...
Godzilla has a brain.
Well, yeah.
If he was sentient?
If he was sentient, yes. Then maybe that could be a way of making your monster memorable.
You do hate the NPC that this
I hate
that made
with,
these.
Yes.
So. All right.
It's a good thing that he's vengeance aligned because the next time I encounter him, I will want to take my vengeance upon him.
Yeah, he's an icon, so that's going to work out really poorly for you.
I should have killed him when I had the chance.
You really should have. So, any final thoughts on monster creation?
I'll take three.
All right. Awesome.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at whitedragon@iconicpodcast.com. or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.